Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. We'll talk about storytelling in screen time later in the show, but now we're in depth on the story Donald Trump is telling about a rigged election.
But if it's rigged, like anything else, look, it was rigged, I thought, a little bit for me, and we won in landslides. I think it was rigged against Bernie Sanders with his superdelegates nonsense.
First of all, it's rigged. And I'm afraid the election's going to be rigged, I have to be honest.
It's rigged here, too, believe me. So I just hope the Republicans are going to be very watchful.
It's not a charge to ignore. As one journalist recently suggested, it strikes right at the center of American identity and democracy. So what is Trump really saying when he suggests that if he loses, Americans should not trust the integrity of the election? And what are the consequences of reinforcing the suspicions of some Americans who are already so distrustful of government institutions? Here's what President Obama thinks of Donald Trump's claims.
Of course the elections will not be rigged. What does that mean? The federal government doesn't run the election process. States and cities and communities all across the country, they're the ones who set up the voting systems and the voting booths. And if Mr. Trump is suggesting that there is a conspiracy theory that is being propagated across the country, including in places like Texas, where typically it's not Democrats who are in charge of voting booths, that's ridiculous. That doesn't make any sense. And I don't think anybody would take that seriously.
Now I want to know what you think about this. Are there solid reasons, do you think, to believe that the integrity of our upcoming general election can't be trusted? Are you worried about the fairness of the election? And do you think a candidate for president to suggest this in the absence of evidence for it is the kind of proper rhetoric we should be hearing in a presidential campaign? So I want to ask you this morning if you think there are solid reasons to question the integrity of our upcoming election. Are you worried about the fairness of it? What do you think about the way Donald Trump and President Obama there talk about it? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. I'm on Twitter, at CarrieNPR. Our guest today, Robert Smith, is professor of political science at San Francisco State University. He's the author of a number of books, including Race, Class, and Culture. And he's with us from near Berkeley, California. And Robert, welcome to the show. It's good to have you here.
Thank you for asking me.
Stuart Stevens is with us. He's a Republican strategist and top campaign strategist to Mitt Romney's presidential run in 2012. He's also the author of the novel, The Innocent Have Nothing to Fear. And he's with us today from near Vermont, or in Vermont. And Stuart, welcome to you. It's good to have you on the show.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thanks very much.
Stuart, Donald Trump uses the word rigged for a lot of different descriptions. He's talked about the rigged economy as well. Does it take on for you a more ominous suggestion when he applies it to the election?
Yes, I mean, it's incredibly irresponsible for any candidate for president to be talking about this. But for a nominee to be talking about it goes, I think, beyond just sort of garden variety irresponsible. This is the kind of rhetoric that begins a drumbeat that kills democracy. First of all, it's gibberish. There's no logic behind what he's saying. There's no proof of it. There's no data points. And it's the worst kind of fear-mongering and drum-beating that make people believe that their democracy isn't really a democracy.
Robert, I hear Stuart when he says it's gibberish. I still think we have to take this seriously. He repeats it a lot. I think there are some people, some Americans, who believe it. Should we be talking about this and taking it seriously?
Well, yes and no. There is no reason to believe that Mr. Trump is correct about the election being rigged. He cited no evidence. It's simply another one of his irresponsible assertions. But I think he may be laying the groundwork so that if he loses, which I think is likely, then he would be able to say he lost because the election was rigged. And he may carry this forward. And that would be, I think, as the other guest there said, very, very dangerous to the American democracy. So I think it's worth ignoring because there's nothing to it, but I don't think we should ignore it because I think, particularly if he continues to say this, then it needs to be discussed and debunked as early as possible.
Yeah, Stuart, Trump recently was talking about the rigged outcome, as he puts it, of the email server investigation against Hillary Clinton. And he was in Virginia at a campaign rally, and he said, "We got to beat a totally dishonest machine. We're running against a rigged system, and we're running against a dishonest media." So here's a place where he combines, you know, an investigation that I think a lot of Americans, if not question the outcome of, wonder about some of the details of. And then he says, and we're up against this big machine, and we can't run fairly against this. The conflation of those two things.
Well, you know, it's Trump style to take a truth and wrap it in lies, and therefore making what might have a glimmer of truth be a lie. Is there a Democratic machine? Of course there is. Is there a Republican machine? Of course there is. They're called parties, and they're stronger in some states than others. The idea that, you know, we really need to go out there and work and rally the troops, that's fine. That's within the normal parameters of political discourse. It's when you start questioning the integrity of the FBI and the legal framework, the rule of law, which is really what he's questioning here. And that's, you know, if you don't believe in that, then you lose an election, then you start looking around trying to find forces within the government or might support you. And, you know, here we are. Next thing you know, it's Chile and Allende. It's very, very dangerous stuff. You know, Trump is kind of a nutty guy who's used to calling talk radio shows and saying nutty things and getting attention. And he hasn't changed. But you can't be a nominee for president and do this stuff because people actually pay attention and give you the credit, at least, for being a serious person.
Well, apparently you can be a nominee for president and do these kinds of things because he's doing them, right?
You can't and be respected or taken seriously. And I think this is why you see this unprecedented number of national security advisors in Democrat and Republican administrations coming forth and saying they can't support Donald Trump.
Let me take a call here from Josh in Isanti. If you're trying to get in on the phone lines, have some really busy phone lines, call us back. I want to hear what you have to say on this as we talk about something that Donald Trump has been repeating on the campaign trail, and that is that the election is rigged, not just the economy, not just some of these investigations that he talks about. But now he's begun talking about the overall election is rigged, and it's raised a lot of concern that maybe this validates the suspicions of some Americans that the election system is not fair, which is why we've asked two guests to talk about it this morning and to Josh in Isanti. Hey, Josh, what are you thinking about this?
So I just wanted to say that, you know, a lot of people don't think your vote matters. Maybe it doesn't. You know, you vote in Minnesota, you're Republican, you vote Republican. Well, it's going to go to the Democrat. But we're the only country, or one of the few countries in the world, where it actually counts, where your vote's counted, and it's, you know, actually, you know, it doesn't matter because it's counted. Trump, I'm a prospective voter for him. I've never voted Republican. I like his populist views, you know, invest in the country, get us out of the Middle East and whatnot. But he's pushed me away more and more every day, so I can't even say I'm going to vote for him in November.
All right.
Because he's rigging it against himself.
Josh, I appreciate the call. You know, Robert, it occurred to me as well that there is a voter suppression element of this, too, that if Trump says this enough times, he just might discourage people from going to the polls who might think, what's the use? It's all rigged. He says it. It's true.
Oh, I doubt that. Well, it might in a few cases, but I think I should say something about the American electoral system, not in terms of the rigging that Trump has offered no substantiation to, but Jimmy Carter, who is the Carter Center. His Carter Center monitors elections around the world for their fairness and freeness. And he has said if he was asked to monitor elections in the United States, the Carter Center would decline to do so because we don't have one national electoral system. We have 50 states, and then those states delegate that to counties. And so you get a huge disparity across the states and then within states. And so there are inefficiencies, and there are possibilities of corruption, not in the rigged sense, but in some places, for example, you have long lines. In the same state, you have long, long lines, and you have outdated voting machines. In other places, you have efficient voting machines, short lines. You have voter suppression going on in the United States today, efforts to suppress the vote of minorities, for example. The courts have stepped in some places to inhibit that.
Recently in North.
There are some problems in the American electoral system, so I don't want to suggest that there's no difficulties in the election process. We see this going back to what happened in 2000 in the Bush-Gore election, and since then Americans have been losing confidence in the electoral system. So I don't think Trump has contributed to this discussion, but I think we should keep in mind that there are problems with the American voting, the election counting process.
Yeah, Robert, just to say, you said there have been some court decisions on these voter ID laws. We just had a big decision in North Carolina that essentially said the opposite of what Donald Trump is saying. It said that the Republican legislature there was actively trying to disenfranchise voters of color in that state.
That's correct. And we have these voter ID laws popping up in Republican-controlled states across the country since the election of President Obama, allegedly to deal with non-existent vote fraud, at least very little of it. So that is a problem. Again, I don't want to conflate the two because Trump is talking about something without foundation, but we should be aware that there have been problems, and there are problems in the American electoral system, largely because we don't have a universal standard. We don't even have a universal right to vote. The right to vote is based on what the state said. So I just wanted to make that point. I don't want to distract from the larger discussion we're having, but I think we should say that. Note that.
Although, I mean, Stuart, I think this is, there are other voters, maybe who are not supporters of Trump, who also feel that the problems are so serious with some of these other disenfranchisement issues that they don't have faith in the electoral system.
Well, you know, the role of leaders is to lead, and everyone has fears. Everyone has concerns. But it's really important that when you speak to this, you do it from a bedrock of truth. And, you know, one of the great tragedies of Trump is he takes problems that are real. I mean, are there problems in our voting systems? Yes, of course. Look at what happened in the New York primary, Democratic primary for president. There were a huge number of voters who felt that they had been disenfranchised. But that doesn't mean that there's some giant conspiracy to rig it. This is bad sort of, you know, spy thriller stuff. And what it does is it damages those who are serious people trying to address serious problems. And it's sort of an anti-governing opinion that Trump has that, well, it's just all rigged and it's just dangerous. You know, there's just a tremendous lack of responsibility of what he's saying.
The DFL minority leader of the Minnesota House, Paul Thiessen, is tweeting in saying, if the system is rigged, it's due to disenfranchising voters and the disproportionate power of big and dark money. That's real. Mark says, faced with massive electoral losses, will Trump have the tenacity to campaign for real or will he phone it in, blaming a rigged system? To the phones, to Nick in St. Cloud. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Carrie. Big fan, first of all.
Thank you.
Second of all, I think that you have to look at not what he's saying, but what he's tapping into. You know, you look at the Kennedy-Nixon elections, and it's all about how you appear on camera. I think we're taking for granted the amount of exposure that a candidate has in these elections. Speaking of a younger voter, I'm 28 years old. I think there's all this exposure, and there's the ability to feel disenfranchised by getting your message out there. I feel is different than any other election. I don't feel I'm a big fan of NPR. I don't feel that early. They covered the Bernie Sanders election fairly with the same weight that they covered the Hillary Clinton election. I followed the Trump election the Trump campaign very early and read a bunch of articles, you know, Trump's joke, this, that, and the other thing. And I do agree that he's dangerous and that these comments are dangerous, as your speaker said. But, you know, I think what he's commenting on and what he's tapping into are two different things. I think he's tapping into the sentiment that it's so easy to spread a message in this modern election era. You know, you've got 20-plus candidates across the board, and it's very easy to tap into voters, and then those voters, because they don't hear their message spread across mainstream media, feel as though they're disenfranchised.
Right.
Where we were looking at something very different in the past, where, you know, the media was, the message was, you know, you've got your mainstream one-channel ABC debate.
Yeah. Hey, Nick, I want to do this because we're hearing some interference in the background from you. Robert, Nick said that he referenced Bernie Sanders, and there was a point at which Bernie Sanders was talking about the nomination process being rigged. Let's listen to how he spoke about that.
Let there be no doubt.
When we talk about a rigged system, it's also important to understand how the Democratic Convention works. We have won, at this point, 45% of pledged delegates, but we have only earned 7% of super delegates.
So, Robert, I mean, I think he came back afterwards and said, well, rigged was a stupid thing to say, but I don't think the process was fair. How do you hear how Sanders talks about what leads up to the nomination and the equity of that?
Well, I think as a political scientist, I think the superdelegates play an important role. Superdelegates are elected officials, party leaders, governors, members of Congress, members of the Democratic National Committee. And I think they serve as an important balance in the process of selecting a nominee that is responsible to the party. My guess is if the Republicans had had something like the superdelegates, Mr. Trump would not be the nominee. And the purpose of the Democratic Party putting in the superdelegates was kind of a check and balance, and I think they serve and play an important role in terms of preventing precisely the kind of Trump phenomenon. So on that issue, I understand his point, but I don't think the superdelegates violate democratic principles or rig the system in any way. They were put in order to provide a check on democratic excesses, if I can use that phrase. And I think Trump is an example of democratic excesses that even the founding fathers had concern about and put in various checks and balances in the American Constitution. I would say the election process is rigged, and Trump, Senator Sanders talked about this, and one of your callers talked about this, the enormous role played by money, big money, I think does rig the process. I think you cannot have the principle of one vote, one person, and then one big paycheck, one big check, kind of counterbalancing the popular will. I think we need reform in that process. I think we need reform in the electoral process generally. I think we need to try to come up with some kind of way, at least to standardize the election process across states. And, of course, I think we need to find some way to get big money out of politics.
Oh, okay.
Trump's campaign shows a way to do that because he was very successful in raising relatively small sums of money.
Yeah. So, Stuart, let me ask you this. Does that mean that when we talk about the influence of money, that the one vote system of the way we elect a president is rigged? Or does it mean that money has such an influence in our larger political process that it is not, that it is rigged in the sense that it's not representative of average Americans? I'm trying to draw a distinction there.
After Watergate, we came up with some serious reforms. And one of the great reforms was federal funding for presidential elections, which every campaign and nominee stayed in the system until the Obama campaign in 2008 opted out of the system. And I'm one of the few guys around that has done a presidential campaign in the system and out of the system. And I would return to the federal funding system in a heartbeat.
Wow.
It is an absolute tragedy that the Obama campaign walked away from this after pledging to stay in the system, because everybody stayed in the system.
Right.
And, you know, the history of campaign reforms is once you walk away from them, it's hard to get them back. So I am for federal funding of all federal elections, actually. I'm sort of radicalized on this. But I'm not where the public is on this. But at least we did have a system that worked better. Now, you talk to some people and they say, well, you know, Obama had to do this because Citizens United. Well, Citizens United was 2 years after
That's
he
right.
did it.
Right.
So I'm for campaign finance reform. It's a very, very difficult subject. It's one of these things, if you think about it for 5 minutes, it seems easy, and if you think about it for 15, it seems impossible.
May I ask, what do you think about the Republican Party looking towards some variation on the superdelegates as a means to address?
I'll be honest, I'm not an expert on comparing the two systems. I can't really speak to that in any sort of knowledgeable way. There's always tremendous laws of unintended consequences that happen with any of these changes. I think what people don't grasp is the point you were making, that the nominations are organized by the parties. I mean, parties are basically bowling leagues, and they decide how they want to elect their president and vice president, and they just decide this. This is not in the Constitution. It's not. I think if you just landed from Mars and you looked at both delegate selection systems, you'd say both of them were crazy. And it's just often when you try to make changes, you end up with the end result that you didn't think was going to happen. I don't know. I think that Donald Trump could have been defeated by these other candidates. I think it's ultimately up to the candidates to defeat another candidate. And I think that the field of candidates in the Republican primary was not as strong as it was built by virtue of the fact that a very weak candidate won. So I blame those candidates, not the system, for that.
Stuart, we have to let you go, don't we?
Okay.
Unfortunately.
Yes, thanks very much. I really
enjoyed
it.
Okay, come back. Stuart Stevens with us. He's a former Mitt Romney strategist, ran the campaign in 2012, and a founder of Strategic Partners Media. And because I love books, I'm going to mention that he's also a novelist, the author of The Innocent Have Nothing to Fear. It's a conversation this hour where we're talking about claims that Donald Trump makes about the election being rigged. He says it often. We played at least three or four instances where he's been talking about this on the campaign trail. We're trying to decode what he really means when he says that. But I also am asking, what do voters hear when they hear Trump talking about that? Is this a way that suppresses votes? It undermines the faith that Americans have in the integrity of the election. 651-227-6000 to talk to us about it this morning. 800-242-2828. Robert Smith continues with us. He's professor of political science at San Francisco State University. We'll be right back to your calls and questions on the other side of news, but to Phil Picardi now. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Carrie. GOP presidential candidate Donald Trump says the media is getting it wrong. Trump says he never advocated violence when he suggested supporters of the Second Amendment could do something if Hillary Clinton is elected president and she stacks the Supreme Court with anti-gun justices. Trump says he was talking about gun rights supporters using their voting power. Clinton's campaign is trying to win over Republicans and independents. An effort called Together for America aims to use a wave of nearly 50 endorsements by high-profile Republicans and independents to persuade voters to cross party lines. Some Republicans say they back Clinton because they don't support Donald Trump's bombastic style and controversial statements. Turkey's president is calling on a group of businessmen to report to authorities anyone they suspect of being a follower of the people behind last month's failed coup attempt. President Recep Tayyip Erdogan told Turkish exporters today, even if it means turning in family and friends, it's everyone's patriotic duty to expose supporters of Fethullah Gulen, a U.S.-based Muslim cleric accused of orchestrating the coup attempt. Turkey has arrested 16,000 people in the wake of that coup attempt. Government officials in Iraq say 12 newborns were killed when fire caused by faulty electrical wiring ripped through a maternity ward at a Baghdad hospital. One father says he lost twins in the fire. He says when he could not find his children at the hospital where parents were transferred, he was told to look for them at the morgue. And stocks opened flat on Wall Street. European markets slipped, as did major exchanges in Asia. At last look, the Dow was trading up about 19 points. More news ahead on NPR News. It's 9:32.
Later on All Things Considered, we'll talk about some of the best burgers you can find around the state, which won't break your budget. I'm Stephen John. We'll serve up appetites, as well as the latest from the campaign trail and all the day's news. Join me starting at 3.
Hey, I know sometimes you have to step away from the radio. You have a life to lead, but you don't want to miss the conversations. Here's how to work that out. Listen to my podcast. Search for it. NPR News with Carrie Miller in iTunes. You'll hear these dog days of summer shows that I'm doing. You'll hear that Friday roundtable on race and inequity, hearing from a lot of people on that. And our whole summer Take It to the Lake summer fiction series. All there on the podcast.
Programming is supported by MacPhail Music for Life, lessons designed for adults 55 plus, offering instrument and voice lessons for absolute beginner through experienced musician. Information and registration at MacPhail.org.
Resuming our conversation here about Donald Trump's claims that the election is rigged and bringing a new guest into the conversation. Joseph Uzinski is Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Miami, and he's with us today from Miami, Florida. And Joseph, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Well, we've spent a little bit of time for the beginning of this conversation talking about how ridiculous these claims are that Donald Trump is making and the absence of evidence. But I don't know that we've dug in enough on the danger, I guess, of a presidential candidate saying these things in front of large crowds and having it repeated on the media. Well, I'd love your sense of that.
It doesn't concern me so much that he is saying that the election might be rigged. I mean, many people already agree with that. When we do polls prior to elections, you have about two-thirds of the country who thinks that there's going to be some sort of malfeasance in the election.
Wow.
After the results are announced, then that number cuts in half because the winning party thinks there was no fraud and only the losers believe that there was fraud. And this happens with every election that we've been polling this on for the last 16 years, even when you go back to 2000, up until the winner was announced very late. Members of both parties were concerned that there was going to be fraud. And after George W. Bush was announced as the winner, many Democrats believed that fraud had taken place, and many refused to accept President Bush as a legitimate president. So this is nothing new, and it's many people already agree with Donald Trump. The conspiracy theories he says that frighten me a lot more are those that are made against vulnerable groups like immigrants and minorities, because those are people who can't really protect themselves. So when we talk about conspiracy theories saying that the president has a fake birth certificate or the voting is rigged, I mean, those things are very well protected. But minorities and immigrants, particularly undocumented ones, are not well protected.
But let me ask you about when you tell me that such a large number of poll respondents will say that they think that the election is what's the phrase you use? Not rigged, right? What's the question in the poll?
Oh, so there are quite a few polls that have been taken, and the wordings are, you know, depending how you word it, you'll get slightly different results. But with that said, the numbers come out roughly the same, that you get about two-thirds. So if you ask people, if your candidate doesn't win in November, do you think the result will have been due to fraud?
Okay.
And you get about two-thirds saying that.
Well, I mean, fraud perpetrated by who and where?
Well, for Democrats and Republicans, it's different. So when you dig down a little bit and you ask them what sort of fraud they believe in, Democrats are concerned that their voters will not be allowed to vote. So they're concerned about disenfranchisement.
Okay.
Whereas Republicans are concerned about the exact opposite, that Democrats are going to go out and vote 10 times, as Donald Trump says. And we've seen this been playing out for the last 16 years since 2000. Democrats thought they got robbed, so they did Herculean efforts at mobilization in 2004 and 2008. And because of that, when Republicans came to power in 2010, they believed that Democrats had abused registration efforts and mobilization efforts, you know, particularly with ACORN. So when they took over legislatures and governorships, they started passing voter ID laws to stop what they thought was voter ID fraud.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I want you both to listen to, since we've talked about 2000 and the Supreme Court hearings and then the ultimate decision 5 weeks after the election ended, I want you both to hear how Al Gore handled that concession and what that meant, I guess, to faith and the integrity of the system. Let's listen.
Let there be no doubt. While I strongly disagree with the court's decision, I accept it. I accept the finality of this outcome, which will be ratified next Monday in the Electoral College. And tonight, for the sake of our unity of the people and the strength of our democracy, I offer my concession. I also accept my responsibility, which I will discharge unconditionally, to honor the new president-elect and do everything possible to help him bring Americans together in fulfillment of the great vision that our Declaration of Independence defines and that our Constitution affirms and defends.
So, Robert, was that an important moment, do you think, for the country?
I'm very glad you played that clip because imagine Donald Trump in a similar circumstance. I mean, there was pressure on Vice President Gore to reject the legitimacy of the court's decision, and he could very well have thrown the country into turmoil. I suspect in a similar set of circumstances that is precisely what Trump would do. So I'm very concerned not about the kind of generic problems in the electoral process in this country, but I'm very concerned that you have a presidential nominee who is predisposed, it seems, to encourage and build a movement around the idea that the American political system itself is rigged.
Yeah.
The American political system is not rigged. The American political system, the electoral process, has certain problems that can be and should be corrected. But Al Gore acted in a statesman-like way, and Donald Trump is not acting in that way now. And if he loses the election, I'm afraid that he might carry this on and do more damage to the American democracy in the aftermath of a campaign than he is doing in the course of the campaign.
Joseph, the Al Gore moment, if you will, and then we'll go back to the phones.
Well, that was very statesmanlike of him, and I think what bothers me about Donald Trump is that, particularly his talk on this, is that it's not statesmanlike. But I think your other guest ought to call up the Democratic Party and tell them what he just said. I mean, the first night of the DNC convention, we heard the word rigged over and over again from their speakers. They said the entire political system and economic systems are rigged. So I don't know why it's okay for Democrats to say everything is rigged, but somehow we get all upset if Donald Trump says one puny election is rigged.
Yeah, well, we actually mentioned and played some sound from Bernie Sanders saying that the nomination process had been rigged. Now, he recanted that afterwards, but he said it, and as you point out, it was repeated quite often from the podium.
it was a mainstay of his campaign that the entire political system and economic system had been rigged by the 1%. Elizabeth Warren agrees that everything's rigged. She just names a different conspirator. She says Republicans rigged everything.
Let's grab a call here from Suda in Minneapolis. Okay, we just missed her to Catherine in Minneapolis. Hi, Catherine. What'd you want to say?
A related point is that every election we have such an amazingly low turnout. We take our democracy for granted. Just think, in other countries, they'll fight and die for democracy, for a chance to vote. The massacre of protesters in Tiananmen Square happened. They were protesting for the right to vote. And we are so lucky to have that right, but yet so little people turn out. And also, so many people do not educate themselves about the candidates and about world affairs, national affairs. People just kind of go about their own lives. They will then gravitate towards the candidate who has the most compelling style of speech, and vote for a personality rather than, okay, this person might be a compelling speaker and say things that resonate with me, but what will they actually do in office? What are their platforms?
Catherine, I appreciate your view here. I have an entire phone bank here of people waiting to get on. Thanks very much for the call. To Bob in Minneapolis. Hey, Bob, what would you say about this?
Well, while I almost never agree with Mr. Trump, I do believe, in fact, that the whole system is rigged. It's called gerrymandering, and it's baked into the entire system. For instance, in 2012, there were 1.1 million more Democrat votes cast, and yet the U.S. House of Representatives has 22 disproportionately representatives in it. And, you know, the gerrymandering that occurs guarantees that there are always safe districts.
Okay, let me put this to our guest this morning. Joseph, when it comes to gerrymandering, is Bob right that that's a form of rigging the system?
Depends how it's done. But, you know, gerrymandering happens for a whole lot of reasons, you know, for racial reasons, to improve on racial disparity in our representation, for partisan reasons, you know, for reasons that incumbents want to protect their own seats. But what we find is that, you know, when districts change, you know, people do tend to lose their seats. And while a lot of people in Congress, you know, do tend to keep their seats over time, there is some turnover. Some of it has to do with, you know, what your caller's talking about, and that's gerrymandering.
I wonder, Robert, if you agree with something that Jim Garrity wrote in the National Review, which we should say the National Review does not support Donald Trump, even though it's a conservative publication. He wrote, "No one ever just loses anymore. There are no honest defeats. The philosophy of the disgruntled toddler has taken root far and wide across the political spectrum. If I win, the game was fair. If I lose, the only possible explanation is that the other guy cheated." I mean, does that sound like our politics today?
No, I don't think so. Romney lost, McCain lost, Gore lost, and they accepted the outcome. In the course of their campaigns, they never suggested that anything untoward had happened or would happen in terms to affect the outcome of the election. Trump is unique in this regard with this kind of rhetoric. But I want to say a word. The gerrymandering is a deliberate rigging of the voting representation process. The Citizens United and its progeny is a deliberate rigging of the democratic process, giving some citizens, the 1% of the citizenry, a disproportionate impact, a disproportionate influence on the political process. Wall Street does, in fact, exercise enormous influence on Congress, particularly when it deals with their narrow interests. Ordinary people's voices are not heard in the process.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we should overlook that. And Trump is talking about a particular aspect of rigging in a election outcome. That is not a part of the American political system, never has been. But that is not to say that other parts of the system, economic and political, are not, quote, rigged. And people both on the left and right have called attention to that. That's a separate, I think, discussion from the discussion about this inflammatory and irresponsible suggestion that Trump is making now, which I think he might, in fact, if he loses the election, not bow out gracefully, not bow out in a statesmanlike way, but continue to make this ridiculous argument that somehow the election was stolen.
That's
what I find particularly disturbing about this talk about rigging.
Joseph, I hear what Robert's saying about some of the elements of our political process. And as you know, there's a lot of debate about reforming, gerrymandering, and some of the other issues around this. But I think it is a different matter. I wonder if you agree than saying those are some of the reasons gerrymandering, the influence of money, that the system is not as fair as it could be. That is a different thing from saying, and if I lose, some dark entity has pulled the levers and the system is rigged.
Yeah, I mean, we can have disagreements about how the system could be more democratic and how it can work better and be more transparent. And that's a separate issue from saying, you know, there's some, you know, shadowy figure in the dark pulling strings.
Right.
And manipulating things in ways that we don't know about.
But that's the thing Trump is saying.
Two very different things.
Yeah. So a listener here on Twitter says, James says, that Al Gore clip was good but too little too late. He already caused a huge problem by dragging the 2000 election into the courts. And then Joan says, I've said for years that Al Gore was a national hero for having conceded in the way he did, and people laughed. Now they get it. Yes, we are still fighting out the 2000 election outcome. No surprise there. To the phones, to Dory in Ham Lake. Hi, Dory. Thanks for waiting.
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what'd you want to say?
I just wanted to say that my experiences with voting have always been very good. I do have faith in the system, and I think that's what we need to have. And I voted in different states, and I religiously vote pretty much, you know, when I can. And my question is there any statistics on these people that tend to be so negative on their voting records? You know,
okay.
Are they really actively participating, or are they just sitting on the sidelines and complaining?
Joseph, good question there. What would you say?
So one thing I study is people who have a conspiracy-minded mentality. So through surveys, we figured out what types of people are very conspiratorial in their thinking and which ones are not. And the ones who have a conspiracy worldview are those who are least likely to vote. They're least likely to donate money, least likely to take part in meetings. They're least likely to volunteer. So people who have this sort of rigging mindset that shadowy figures are doing things in the dark without our knowledge and against the rest of us, those people they don't take part for reasons that make perfect sense. If you think the system is rigged, then you stay out of it.
Jose in St. Paul says, as an immigrant, I'm trying to learn politics. I don't see it being rigged. It's just very disorganized. Understanding politics is very hard. Superdelegates, electoral college, there is just something tricky about this. Robert, I think that raises a good question, which is, you know, how well do Americans understand this complicated electoral system we have? And do you think that leads to some of the confusion and questions about whether it's equitable?
I think so. It is a very, very complicated system compared to virtually any other democracy in the world. The electoral college, the primaries and caucuses, superdelegates. It is a very complicated system. And again, the rules vary from state to state in terms of voter qualifications, voter ID. It's federalism. That's a feature of the American political system. And then this notion of checks and balances of the electoral college and things like that. So it's a very complicated system. Most people have no idea, have no sense that a person could win the presidency without actually winning a majority of the vote of the people.
The popular vote, yeah.
Popular vote. We have a lot of elections in this country. Every 2 years there's a national election. So
compared to most other democracies where you have a parliamentary system and you have multi-parties where people have a range of choices, we have a unique political system, and it's complicated, it's inefficient, it's sloppy, it's messy. We have a media that's, you know, that distorts reality on a daily, hourly basis almost. So, but in the end, it works out reasonably well. I mean, the American people generally get the kind of outcome they wish. I don't think there's ever been an election in American history where the popular will has been distorted in a gross kind of way. You have a couple of times where presidents have been elected without winning the majority, but generally the system works reasonably well in respecting the will of the people, in spite of all its difficulties.
Joseph, you agree with that?
I agree with the statement that people get the government they deserve.
I didn't say that. I said that.
Yeah, everybody confuses justice with what benefits them. And as a result, you get a tax code that's hundreds, if not thousands, of pages long with special carve-outs for every little group. Mm-hmm. You get all sorts of special little laws for each industry and whatnot. And everyone's a special interest, you know, and every special interest gets a little something somewhere. So because people believe that what they want is right, well, everyone gets a little something, and it comes at the expense of everybody else.
It's such a good point, because I know when people hear the phrase special interest, they think those other people that are getting stuff. They don't think, well, I'm a farmer and we have a pretty good lobby in Washington, or I'm a member of a labor union and we lobby. You know, all of these special interests, as you point out, working the system to gain an advantage. And average Americans don't think, I think, of special interests as the thing that represents them. It's those other people that are doing nefarious things in the political system.
That's right, because our interests aren't special. Our interests are justice.
That's
right. Well, there's some interests more special than others, for example, though. The working people, for example, poor people, for example, middle-class people generally do not find their interests very well represented in Washington. There's excellent work on this. If there is a conflict between what the rich want and what the middle class want, the rich usually win in Congress. So it's not – there is interest group politics, but some interests have a louder voice in Washington than others, which I think contributes to this sense of a general unfairness in the economic/political system in the United States. And I don't think that should be gainsaid. We do not have, to use a phrase, a level playing field with all citizens having an equal chance to have their interests represented in Washington. I wish that was
totally
the case.
Totally agree.
We'd have a different kind of public policies if we had equal representation of interest in Washington, but that's certainly not the case.
And Robert, I did not mean to suggest that, you know, that it's easy to counterbalance the effect, let's just say, of the financial industry in Washington, right? I know they throw a lot of money at being influential. But I also want to be clear that when people rant and rave about special interests, it's usually not the thing that, as Joseph just suggested, the thing that they want. And is represented in some way through some lobbying or trade organization. Just not, you're saying they don't have the power that some of these other large, well-funded special interest groups have.
Well, the middle-class Americans, poor Americans in particular, simply are not represented in Washington. I mean, that's just, there's no lobby for poor people that is able to exercise anywhere near the influence of the lobbyists for Wall Street or for bombers. So that's just an unfortunate aspect of the economic political system that gives certain groups, particularly economic groups, an advantage over the rest of us. One way to address that would be to remove money from politics, have campaigns publicly financed, that kind of thing. But even if you did that, there would still be, in a capitalist system, business, corporations, wealthy people are going to have more influence than people like you and I.
Robert, I really appreciate the time this morning and getting up early in California to join us. Thank you.
Thank you for asking.
Joseph, I wanted to ask you about that. Stuart Stevens, who was on the show before you joined, said that he has been a longtime advocate of public financing, even though he ran the campaign for Mitt Romney, who didn't take the public financing. Would it solve a lot of the problems that people suggest?
No, absolutely not. And I think people are kidding themselves if they think that Citizens United is some evil boogeyman that's buying our elections. I mean, Bernie Sanders did incredibly well on donations that averaged, as he said, $27 apiece. So if he could do as well as he did coming in second place for a National Party nomination, in spite of Citizens United, then that just sort of proves the point that Citizens United doesn't really affect all that much. I mean, if you think about what it is, I mean, Citizens United allows free speech about politics, and that should be our most sacred value in the United States, and that's why it's in the very First Amendment to the Constitution. So trying to limit political speech by saying that people can't spend money on it, I mean, to me is very un-American and frankly dangerous.
So you really do not think that the kind of money that we have in the American political system is a problem?
I'm sure there are some problems that it causes, but if one suggests that money is just buying people outright, I don't think that's the case. Most interests tend to give money to representatives and,
it buys
and Congress
access.
Who already agree with them.
Doesn't
so it's
it
not
buy
like they're changing a lot of votes.
Joseph, doesn't it buy access? It isn't that they're buying the politician. And this is what the politicians always say. Well, I can't be bought. No, it buys access. You get your call returned. You get the FaceTime with the representative. You get your interests represented in a way that, as Robert said, the average American doesn't have that kind of access. Isn't that where the money goes?
Well, nobody's going to – in what system will everyone have equal access in a country of 350 million people? I mean, you're not going to have it, right? So access is going to have to be divvied out in some way. And when citizens go to see their congressman, they invest quite a bit in constituent services. So it's not like the congressman hides in a room with rich people, locks all the poor people out, and doesn't talk to them ever. I mean, the vast majority of voters are middle class and poor people. They're not just the 1%.
Who don't show up in Washington to have one-on-one meetings with their members of Congress. So wait a minute. You are saying that you don't believe that if you spend money, you get special access in Washington.
I'm sure it does, but I don't think it perverts the system to a point where it would be better to that somehow you could either get rid of all money or somehow it's perverted the system to the point where only people with money get programs. If that's the case, you know, why did we have the Great Society? Why did we have the New Deal? Why do we have programs for welfare and other social welfare programs? If what you're saying is true, then poor people and middle class people should be getting nothing ever. But they do get programs specifically for them. And the issues that affect the middle class are all that politicians talk about. They don't talk about, issues for rich people. Maybe they talk about them in private rooms, but the agendas that are out there for the nation are talking about the middle class, because that's who the voters are.
Unfortunately, I have to wrap this up. I really want you to come back and talk to me about this in depth. Will you do that? We'll invite another guest. It'll be a good conversation.
Oh, I'd be happy to.
Good. Thank you. Joseph Uzinski with us, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Miami. There will be a future conversation about that. You can count on that.